Hello!
Good evening and welcome.
How very apt.
How does he speak?
Well, something like
that. Good evening and welcome.
No, that's turning into Bruce Forsyth now.
Good my love.
good game.
I'm Paul Carenza.
And I am John Sands, who can't really do accents.
You're meant to say, and I'm John Sands. And really? I did not have sexual intercourse with that woman.
You see, now you're getting your accents and your presidents all confused.
Oh, you know, what did he say? Oh, he says,
I'm not a crook.
I'm saying that when the president does it, that means it isn't illegal. I'm sorry.
There you go. Well done. Very good.
I've seen the trailer a few times.
Yes.
Yes, hello, welcome to Movie Banter.
Welcome to snowy Britain.
That was Frost Nixon, can you tell?
Frosty Nixon.
That's why
you're the comic.
That ruined my joke for later.
Oh, really? Sorry.
That's all right. It doesn't matter. It's a rubbish joke. Because it's very snowy here. It's really snowy. It's snowier than it's been in years.
18 years, man.
Well, yeah. My neighbour, he says he's lived here 60 years. Hasn't seen it this bad in 60 years, he reckons. But I built a snowman on Monday because it's snowy. Yay!
And you have no friends.
So I was going to say I was going to call him Frosty the Snowman, but I called him Frost the Snowman and then built another one called Nixon the Snowman.
Oh, was
it? Just sat them next to each other.
Have them
and occasionally
each
had
other.
Kevin Bacon bursty and saying, "You can't say that!" but didn't.
I bet you did, really, didn't
I
you?
I did that. I did that entirely. welcome to Movie Banter. We've got plenty of films to get through this week.
We have.
Such as Frost Nixon, which we've both seen. We'll be talking about that shortly.
Also, Nick and Nora.
We've got Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist.
Which is like Frost Nixon in almost no way whatsoever.
Indeed. Well, there's two people in it. And others.
Yes.
Vicky Cristina Barcelona, which is not out until this weekend.
Ooh.
Which may be when you're listening to this. I don't know.
It'll be online.
But no, I've seen advanced screening, so we'll talk about that.
Valkyrie. Bit of wartime frolics.
I do like the idea of, obviously, Vicky Cristina Barcelona. They've taken the two main character names and the place it's set. So, in fact, you could also say we'll be doing Vicky Cristina Barcelona, David Richard Los Angeles.
True.
Frost Nixon, obviously. Nick Nora New York.
That works.
Valkyrie. Klaus Adolf Berlin.
Nice.
That's good, isn't it? That works quite well, actually. Revolutionary Road, a.k.a. Jack Rose Dullsville. a little bit of a preview of my review.
Yes.
I hated it.
You weren't a fan.
And Austin W. as well this week. George Washington. But loads of good quality films there to get through. But before we get to those film reviews, several bits of admin out of the way. Actually, one bit of admin, first of all. I did want to get out of the way. Which is,
I'm just curious as to admin.
Well.
What filing you want to do?
We have got admin. There is any other business.
Should I call the secretary in?
If you could, that would be nice. Firstly, apologies. Handheld high. About 3 weeks ago, I completely made mockery of John for his editing cock-up by removing... the fact that I've erred about 8 times in this sentence is why we edit, you see. You won't have heard those errs. There were edits.
No, I might leave them in.
Leave them in, just
to prove it.
A bit of colour.
Yes, I removed a section of debate or discussion at the start.
Yeah.
But then left in a slight reference to that debate.
Exactly, so it didn't make much sense. We do occasionally edit this as we go because, believe it or not, we actually have to whittle down to this level of wittiness.
Yes.
Just
imagine what we get rid of.
The uncut version is absurd. The director's cut of this podcast.
It's frequently obscene as well.
It lasts a week. In fact, all we do, we record all week and then just trim it down to what you hear. Last week I got to edit for the first time.
Yes.
And
You did choose to.
I may have slightly ballsed it up. You did hear last week's broadcast, you'll have heard it repeat a couple of times. This is the award special. Handily, though, it did repeat at sections we were doing, like the BAFTAs, Best Cinematography, and then it repeated when we got to the Oscars, Best Cinematography. But you may have heard exactly the same opinions about exactly the same people. So,
in your defence, it wasn't anything you did specifically wrong.
No, it was some gremlins somehow. Gremlins, that would be a great thing to be in the Oscar list, but it wasn't, unfortunately. So apologies, next time we will double, triple check it. So if there was a little bit of a glitch last week, then it wasn't you just going a bit mad, it was actually the podcast going
Have left it. It is you going a bit mad.
It is.
Yes, we're not even saying this now.
These are the voices
you're hallucinating.
In your head.
Yes, there's no such thing as a Movie Banter podcast, you'll just make this up.
I don't know what you mean. La 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 la. what else? Other admin. I'm sure there's other admin to have.
Emails.
Emails!
That's probably the admin.
Your emails.
Well, there's one bit of admin but relates to the emails. Firstly, to Adam in New York.
Hi, Adam.
Who was emailed a few times, who used to be called Adam New York until we found out his surname.
Yeah.
But with various suggestions of episode titles for future episodes.
So we won't give them away now, but we will store them away.
Exactly.
And, Adam, if you're one of the lucky one people drawn out of a hat of one people who sent things in, then you too may have an episode named after something you suggested. This is because we subtitled each episode based on numbers from films. Yeah.
Hence episode Ocean's 11 and episode 12 Angry Men.
So this is episode, this is gonna be episode 13, isn't it?
Yes, and Adam has made a suggestion, which we could say here, or we could just put it online. And he also says, and this is an example to you all, he's got some friends listening in now.
Hey!
So he's spreading the good word. Well, spreading the word.
I thought it was just showing off for a second. I've got some friends. Well done.
I've got some friends. Which full is... stop. Listening in now.
Exactly. Thanks. That's nice to know.
Just rubbing his friends in our face.
That would be nice. Really? I don't know. I haven't met his friends. I'm sure that'd be quite nice to... I want to stop there.
I do wish you would.
We've also had an email from Ali Sutcliffe. Thank you, Ali. Says, just a quick note to say thank you for not giving away the ending of The Usual Suspects.
Ooh.
You see? This is from a slight discussion we had a week or two ago about giving away the endings of films, because we were talking about The Usual Suspects. Should we or should we not?
A slight discussion, which the unedited version of which was pretty much me going on just a fairly hefty rant.
Another reason we edit was it just got slightly uncomfortable.
Well, true. Yeah, when you're ending up with me bludgeoning you to death,
pretty much.
It's just not fortunate.
Yeah. So Ali is actually saying that we are correct in not giving away the ending of The Usual Suspects, which I slightly defended. And because Ali says that I'm trying to avoid saying he or she, because Ali can be a he or a she.
Well, that is true.
So I'm saying Ali said that he or she hadn't seen The Usual Suspects yet, and so this has encouraged him or her to go out and see that film.
Yes. Well, yeah, so I can appreciate there is a reason not to do it. It was more just frustrating that when discussing a film that it has a twist ending that's quite old,
it's true,
I felt hampered
in
my ability to discuss it by not referring to the ending.
A little bit.
I can see that there is a plus side to not mention the ending, because hopefully, in the case of Ali, then you can
if we'd done that, we'd be now getting hate mail from Ali. So
well, that is true. He'd be sending a violent tirade.
Bear in mind, Ali Sutcliffe could be... Probably.
Now, Ali, if you're listening, the only reason we're laughing is if you're in the UK, you may know what we're talking about. If you're not, you really won't.
To be honest, I don't... Wherever Ali Sutcliffe lives, probably... Ali, again, he or she has probably heard about Peter Sutcliffe.
Well, possibly.
The Yorkshire Ripper. And apologies for bringing up, once again, Ali, and also, not only bringing up that, but also, once again, the ambiguity of your name. So, you're starting to regret having emailed in the first place, having likened to you to, A, a relative of a serial killer, and B, ambiguous gender. But did say in your email, so thanks, and do feel free to ridicule me if you see fit.
Exactly.
So,
and this isn't even ridicule.
It's not
just
ridicule.
Really,
it's just we feel slightly
surnames.
Awkward that we happen to have likened
you
both
brought
those
up
things.
Yeah.
So sorry about that, Ali. Please forgive us.
If you give us your surname, that may well happen. But then this is why then Adam, he didn't give us his surname, and so we called him New York.
Which makes things up, exactly. Yeah. But it's not as bad as a few weeks ago. We implied that Tom, one of our listeners, may have been killed in the process of the week's listening to it. So.
Well, that is true.
Yeah.
And did he?
No, he's all right.
Oh, really?
I think.
Is he still?
Well, he emailed about a week ago saying he was fine.
But he's been silent for the last week.
I haven't heard for about a week or so, though. Tom, if you're out there, let us know.
Is this going to become a new feature, just checking on the general well-being of Tom?
Well, Ali Sutcliffe is out there, might be slaying people left, right and centre. Oh, sorry, Ali.
Famous fictional serial killer.
This is why we edit, you see. It's a bit like
this. No, this fits into the banter category.
Does it really? It fits into the offending listeners category.
Well, that's true. And frankly, we haven't got enough to really afford to lose it. But we'll see how it goes.
If you listen to this, then well done. This bit kept in.
Anyway, moving on.
If you listen to this on repeat, then that's because Rem's got in again and decided to repeat this bit again and again.
Well,
so,
yes.
Apologies.
Please stop.
Will do.
Anyway, but cracking on as rapidly as possible. We've got an email from James saying, I really like these podcasts. Thank you very much. I was listening to episode 10. Notice we pronounced... See, this is going to be weird pronouncing it wrong. Anyway, we said Zooey Deschanel.
Yeah.
Which is how it's spelled Z-O-E-Y. So her name is actually pronounced Zooey Deschanel, which weirdly, about 3 days after recording that, I looked her up because of Yes Man or something else.
How is she? You looked her up?
She was fine. Went around, had a cup of tea.
That's nice. She's still alive?
I don't know now.
Oh dear.
She might be in the same car as Tom.
You're getting paranoid, aren't you now?
Not really, I don't know her. But anyway, so I looked that up and came across that and thought, it is pronounced differently. But yes, but thank you, James, for pointing that out. See, that was another admin thing.
That's more admin.
Pronunciation of Star's name.
Admin's very important as a podcast. You've got to have it admin.
Yes, but I'm also a stickler. I mean, obsessive, pedantic geek that I am. When it comes to celebrity names, I quite like getting them right. It's like I used to pronounce the female star of Spider-Man, Kirsten Dunst. And it's not, it's Kirsten Dunst.
It is, isn't it? It's Kia. Yeah.
Yes, and also one last email from Jed in Singapore, who is a friend of the show, I think we could probably bless put it that way.
Which we might imply that he may either be dead or have killed someone. That's what we do for friends of the show.
Well, that is implied or that's not implied?
I can't remember now.
Okay, one of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, saying listen to Desert Island Flicks section of episode Ocean's 11. Great interest. That was the Tim Burton Desert Island
Flicks. Oh, yes, indeed.
He said he's not, from the sound of it, not a huge fan of Tim Burton, but certain films he holds dear to his heart, like Big Fish.
Exactly, that's my particular choice. That was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's very true. And Batman is classic. But weirdly, he does mention that he doesn't particularly like Batman Returns, saying it was more of a horror film. While he likes bits of it, it seems a pointless exercise in Burtonism. And weirdly, I quite like the pointless exercise in Burtonism.
I like the word Burtonism, personally.
Well, that is true.
Yeah.
No, Batman Returns, I don't quite like more than Batman, but I think it has a lot going for it. But it is a very weird, dark film.
I've seen both again. I've seen them for years, actually.
I saw Batman Returns on over Christmas, because it is a Christmas film, which isn't often thought of. Yeah. And, of course, Michelle Pfeiffer. Classic.
Speaking of Desert Island Flicks,
yes.
And also speaking of Batman Forever. Forever? No, sorry. No. Batman Returns. No,
could have been worse. Could have been Batman and Robin.
I drifted Batman then. No, I wanted to set the Desert Island Flicks for this week, because we're going to, I'll set it early and you can have a think about it and then we can come back to it next time. So I was thinking, given the snowy weather, I would pick the best snow film.
Ooh.
Best film with snow in it as a feature.
Right.
Which I'm guessing Batman Returns has, I presume.
Yes.
And I was just thinking, there are quite a few films, not necessarily Christmas films, but there are films based in some way in snow or around snow. And, some good ones. But you've got half an hour or so to think about it.
Okay,
so
I'll have a muse. Yes.
And think about it then.
I've also just scrolled down for you on my laptop without looking.
Very good.
To the movie timeline this week in movie history.
This week in movie history. Final bit of admin, probably. And then
this is a feature.
We've moved on from admin to features. Yes.
Arguably, admin is a feature.
Well done for making it past the admin.
Admin.
One of making it past the admin.
Yes.
To a feature. Well done. Well done, podcasty.
I'm now desperately trying not to stare at the laptop in order to ruin it.
Okay, anyway. In this week in movie history, you'll get all of these. These are really easy.
Okay.
2005, February 1st, Charlie Bucket and four other children tour Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory in...
Well, it could be either of them. Charlie in the Chocolate Factory or Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory.
I'll give you the year again. 2005.
Oh, sorry. Okay. It's going to be Charlie in the Chocolate Factory.
Exactly.
Sorry.
Now, and this is a very cool one. And I remember, actually woke up February 2nd and remembered...
Groundhog Day!
I
remember that. There's a very good article on Den of Geek all about the history of Groundhog Day and the making of it. And apparently Bill Murray and Harold Ramis fell out so much during the making of it.
Really?
They are really not particularly close
anymore. Really? So no Groundhog Day 2?
Probably not. They've only recently started working together again on the Ghostbusters game.
Oh, indeed. Yes. Yeah, of course. You know what I found really weird, though, is that I woke up on Groundhog Day, February the 2nd, which was Monday, and it was really snowy.
That's very true.
Which, just like in the film.
And it has been very snowy for every day since.
Like, really, because in the film, they get, snowed in.
Yeah.
And that was literally today.
That was today.
We have been as snowed in as ever, really.
But no groundhogs.
I did go to sleep on Monday night thinking... Will today repeat again? I don't know. And if it had repeated, I wouldn't have minded. I built a snowman. It was quite cool.
Yeah, see, meanwhile, I, being a self-employed, working-from-home man, as are you, but you clearly just decided to... I was trying to think of a way of saying, just mess around a bit. I was going to use rude words, and I won't.
Fair enough.
But yeah, but you clearly did that. Meanwhile, I was stuck at home thinking, I should do some work, really, because I normally do. Being besieged by Facebook posts from people saying, oh, no, I've got the day off, it's brilliant.
There was a lot of that,
wasn't there? I've got to work, really. I had
a lot of very competitive people just phoning up or texting me saying, oh, how's the snow there? It's really bad here. It's like 8 inches. And then you reply going, oh, it's 9 inches here. And they go, oh, well, now it's 10 inches. Oh, it's 11 inches here now.
This is starting to sound something like a filthy text.
It's rather, isn't it?
It? It's 8 inches now. It's 9 inches now.
Not so good. Yeah. Not so good. Last one I'll give you for this. You won't know the film. Okay, I'll tell you the film, actually. You won't get it.
Okay.
Okay, it's a film called La Bamba.
I know it well. Yeah, no, I know La Bamba. It's all about the Gypsy Kings.
Is it?
Isn't it?
Problem,
I thought it was.
Possibly.
La Bamba. Didn't the Gypsy Kings die in a plane crash?
It's a Disney film where the Dia's mother dies.
No, that's the Spanish dubbed version.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
or else possibly the deer.
Stumper.
Or else possibly the deer gets strung up but to the ceiling and then kids hit her with sticks.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Apologies to Addy Sutcliffe for revealing the ending of Bambi, by the way. So clearly, probably you won't have seen that
one.
Oh,
so you're fine with revealing the ending of Bambi.
Clearly. Well, it's halfway through. It's not the end. No, that, yes. 1959 is the day that music died. So that was...
it's not clearly not the Gypsy Kings, because, yeah, I think La Bamba, I'm just thinking, because didn't the Gypsy Kings do a song called La Bamba?
They did do a song called La Bamba.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking. I knew it was a plane crash.
Now,
I was getting reality and films and
films
about reality slightly mixed up.
Is the song La Bamba by Gypsy Kings then, La Bamba, etc.,
yeah.
Is that about the day that music died, the air crash that killed Buddy Holly and Ritchie Valens and Big Bopper? Because obviously American Pie is, that's what all that is about. So I'm just wondering, is La Bamba a very upbeat reinterpretation
version
of American Pie?
Possibly. Yeah. It couldn't be much worse. I hate American Pie.
Saying this will be the day. La, 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 Bamba. It's quite nice, isn't it? It's good to know that.
I'm also being reminded of a very...
Spanish are happier people.
Being reminded of a video I have of you, which on the day, whenever it comes out to before they were famous, I'm going to winch this one out.
Really?
You dancing around a restaurant in Spain.
That's a
La
good
Bamba.
Look. It's a good look.
Really? You with a straw hat on your head and
should
a guitar.
I think we should put it on the blog so the podcasters can see this.
Quite possibly. I may do that just for my own amusement.
We should really banter out some
films.
Should we do some film reviews? Speaking of La Bamba and how that is the upbeat version of American Pie, probably not.
Possibly.
Vicky Cristina Barcelona is a new film out this weekend. It's Woody Allen's latest film, and I think it does go to show that the Spanish have more fun. I think that's generally a good conclusion of the film. I saw it on Sunday at an advanced preview screening.
Yeah. All right for some.
In other words, I just went to a cinema and it happened to be on. Well, can I go? Yeah, fair enough. So just go to the show. Just stagger in and find it. And the critics are calling it a return to form for Woody Allen. It's starring Scarlett Johansson and Rebecca Hall, who we only mentioned last week because she's up for the BAFTA Fresh Newcomer of the Year thingy. She got my vote last week, and that's cemented this week because she's also in Frost Nixon as well.
Oh, that's her.
Yes, indeed. She's Frost's bit of crumpet.
Yes. When I saw the trailer for Vicky Cristina Barcelona, it sort of rang a vague bell, but she looked slightly different, but clearly not.
Yeah,
she was also
Start of a Ten, and she's the daughter of Peter Hall, who's a big theatre director of Shakespeare and stuff. And so she's in it as the sort of in Vicky Cristina Barcelona. She's the outlet for Woody Allen's character. You know, most Woody Allen films have someone who's a bit who is the Woody Allen part,
and normally that is Woody Allen.
Normally it is exactly. And so Scarlett Johansson is this carefree American, and Rebecca Hall plays American as well, but is much more the neurotic Woody Allen-esque person. And they're in Spain, they're in Barcelona, hence the title. Though actually they spend most of the film not in Barcelona, but in a different town called, I think, Obiego, I think it's called, where Javier Bardem, is that who?
Yes, I can never remember if it's Bardem or Bardiem.
I think
Bardem.
It's written Bardem, so unless they add an R.
Let's just call him Jeffrey Dean Morgan, because he looks
identical. He does look like Jeffrey Dean Morgan, doesn't he?
If you don't know who either of them are, look up Javier Bardem and Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who was in Grey's Anatomy.
He was in P.S. I Love You, and what's that one with Uma Thurman, where they have to marry?
Oh, The Accidental Husband, that was awful.
Oh, Accidental Husband,
yes. But they look exactly the same. I don't think I've ever seen two famous people, both famous at the same time, who look so similar.
They should do a film about doppelgangers, where one's American and one's
Spanish.
But Javier Bardem in this film, you'll have seen Javier Bardem in No Country for Old Men, probably, where he plays this amazing killer who can... The whole thing of him in the film is that he can find and kill any man. His role in Vicky Cristina Barcelona, very, very different character. I hardly recognised him, in fact, from No Country for Old Men. Here, he plays someone who can find and have sex with any woman.
Oh, nice.
But amazingly, he's not really a good-looking man, I would say, particularly. He's got some of that broken nose, and he looks, you know, in No Country for Old Men, he's quite a striking but not a good-looking man.
Yeah.
He's not a Tom Cruise by a long stretch. But it's amazing, in Vicky Cristina Barcelona, the charisma of this guy. I'd go to bed with him, to be honest. He's got such charisma in droves. And you may have seen the trailer when he goes up to the table and says to Scarlett Johansson, Rebecca Hall, "Hey, come away with me. We will make love." And they go, "Who's going to make love?" "Well, hopefully the three of us." And he does.
Well done him.
Well done indeed. And then Penelope Cruz comes in, sort of in the third act, really. She's only in the very, very last section of the film, but she really injects the film with a whole new life and a real good buzz. And she's Oscar nominated for a very good reason, I think. I think she's really got a good chance of Best Supporting Actress. And I came away having thoroughly enjoyed the film, really. My only slight doubt would be that it's not funny enough to be a comedy, and it's not dramatic enough to be a drama. It sort of falls in the middle. But
without being quite as rubbish as the phrase dramedy implies.
Well, exactly.
Because that always implies a bit lightweight, and this is just...
Exactly. You don't have to fit one of those two categories to make it a good film, of course. So I think it's a good film. I wouldn't say it's the best thing Woody Allen's done. It's maybe a return to form from the last couple of years, but that does go to show that the last couple of years haven't been brilliant for him.
Although, except Match Point, which I like a lot.
Match Point was good. Scoop, the one after that, was actually so bad that we didn't even get it in the UK.
Oh, really?
No, exactly.
Well, I still haven't seen that.
But no, I thought it was a very charming film, and it's one of those films, and actually there's a couple of films we'll talk about this week, where I think the city is almost a character in the film as well. Barcelona, it's very much part of the film as well, and it makes you... I think someone described it as the film you'd most want to be in of this year. And it's really nice. It's a lovely setting, and you feel warm watching it. So it's a wonderful film. So yeah, I recommend it. Seek it out. Vicar Creston and Buster Lorne.
I will have to.
Yeah, and another film, actually, out this week. Last week, in fact, which, again, has the city as a really big part of the film and a main character, is Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. Now, you've seen this as well, haven't you?
I have. Although I should say, again, to American listeners, which are not all of our international listeners, but America, because I think in America this was out quite a long time ago.
Yeah.
Although I think it may just be out on DVD over there. So it's kind of nice design.
It's topical-ish for them, yeah.
But yes, I saw it this week because it was a bit of a persuasion because I went with Jen, who's Paul's housemate.
Who was in it a couple of weeks ago. And
She crops up on
occasion. You've heard us. We don't really. I haven't seen her for a week.
She probably is. But she, she's going to be a recurring theme. Everyone who gets mentioned may be dead, which is true. And it's slightly morbid.
That'd be a great film. Like a sort of the number 13 style.
If you mention someone's name,
it does sound
die.
Like a Japanese horror film, like one of those sort of... the phone rings. If you answer it, you die in 7 days. In this one, you get mentioned on Movie Phantom podcast, you die.
That'd be slightly scary amount of power to have, because that's just us saying names.
Exactly, that's not so good. Please keep listening.
Exactly. Please write in under fake names, and then you'll be safe. Jen wanted to see, I think it was more keen to see Valkyrie rather than Nick and Nora. But I said, no, come on, Nick and Nora. I was in a sort of lighter mood.
You told me that she wanted to see Revolutionary
Road. Oh, no, she did. Yeah, but I refused to, because you said it was awful.
Good, we'll come
so
to that.
So it came down to Valkyrie.
We'll come to that, yeah.
Came down to Valkyrie and Nick and Nora.
Stay listening, folks, for a right slagging off of that.
But, yeah, so showed her the trailer, and she went, oh, all right, then. And I, because I, all I knew was it was meant to be quite good. That's about it. But I really, really enjoyed it. It's again, it's slightly hard to categorise, because it's not a ridiculously hilarious film. But it's quite funny in parts. Funnier than Vicky Cristina Barcelona sounds.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's aiming to be more funny, I think. And the two main characters in it, Nick and Nora, are, I think, both charming.
Yes,
and you like them.
Michael Cera and Kat Dennings, which
absolutely.
I'm surprised myself that I remember her name.
Well done.
And yeah, they're just sort of two high school kids who he has recently been dumped. She sort of tenuous friends with his ex, but has never actually met him. But has listened to CDs that he's made for his ex. And then eventually they meet without knowing who each other are. But fortunately, that's not a pointless premise of the film, because within quite shortly they work out who each other are. And then set about wandering around New York trying to either find her drunk friend or find a band called Where's Fluffy.
That's right.
And yeah, it's just them walking around, talking a bit, chatting a bit,
that's
getting
sort of,
into scrapes.
It reminded me of slightly sort of Before Sunset, Before Sunrise thing.
Yes.
Also, there's a great film called After Hours, Martin Scorsese film from the 80s, which is, again, that sort of, it starts off at the start of the night and it finishes as the sun comes up. And, I thought it sums up those two really well. But then the nice thing is that it's got a niche of its own, really, and it felt like a really nice... It didn't feel like a gimmick that it was meant to be all a set in one night.
No, definitely not. This, I think we both said this at the same time. It feels, on some levels, like a more modern Dazed and Confused.
Yes, very
as well.
Much so,
Because it's not the end of school
and
as
Slacker
such,
as well, it's another thing it's a bit like. Kids enjoying party season because they finish their exams.
Yeah.
Except
it's not very teenage-focused.
No.
Because we are both old men.
Exactly, yes.
And still very much enjoyed it, because it's sort of old, it's mature teen, it's not kind of high school idiocy, it's more kids
it's
who
people
are
who
older
are, they're,
than
they're driving and they're going to pubs and clubs, but not sort of in that way of, hey, we can drink, let's get wrecked type thing,
yeah,
apart
but just
from
sort of,
one character.
Yes.
But no, they're just going out and having quite a mature sort of night out, really.
Yeah, exactly.
But the script, I thought, was nice in that lines were regularly very funny, a lot of charming lines there, but not, it sort of seemed to me, reminded me of Juno, but for me, Juno seemed a little bit overly trying
I can see that.
It sounded written. It didn't
I can see
that. It's the old argument I heard someone levelling against a lot of these sort of classic American sitcoms, where you've got a kid in it who does sound like a 60-year-old Jewish man, because that's the person who's written the script. And once again, in Juno, I felt that was the case a little bit. It did sound written.
It was like going for a particular style of dialogue.
Yeah, everyone was a bit too kooky.
Yeah.
Whereas in Nick and Nora, I found everyone was just the right side of real.
Mm. And it's sort of, it's sort of a rom-com as well, but it isn't quite, because the couple, it's not quite as simple as, oh, they don't like each other, then they do like each other, then they fall out, then they get back together. It has a slightly more natural feel to it.
My only complaint would be Michael Cera, he's very good in it, and he's doing the same thing he does in Juno and Arrested Development and Superbad.
He's a young American Hugh Grant.
I think
he's just that slightly...
Can he do something else now?
Well, for you be a new action hero?
Well, let's see what else he's got. Can he do anything else, really?
It
would be nice to.
And he's very good at it, but yeah, I can see your point in that it's now his thing.
And I think each of those films, they've sort of replaced each other. So, like, you know, Juno was all very well, and the Superbad came along, which wasn't quite as good as Juno, I think. So if you're going to see one, I'd just see Juno. and then Nick and Nora, I personally prefer to both of those.
Yeah.
So I would say, okay, that replaces those two. And if he makes another film, unless it's better than Nick and Nora, you sort of don't need it, really. You sort of, like, you've done that. You don't need to do another film like that. So I'm hoping he finds something else to do and just grows up a bit. But having said that, I know, it does seem a bit harsh. But, you know, he's done this coming-of-age thing for a while now.
Yes.
He must have come of age
by now. He's now, like, 35.
He should be you can't do that all your life. He's probably well aware of that. He's making them all now while he can. Yeah. He's thinking, this is my niche. I've got to do it quickly.
Well recommended. So whether it's in the cinema or on DVD, give it a go.
It did make me love New York as well. That's what I was going to say.
Yes, that's true.
Lovely. New York as a character in the film was quite nice, and, you know, driving around it, that was good. Frost Nixon, should we talk
Frost
about
Nixon,
that?
Yeah,
that
was out move
this,
on.
That's out probably a week or two ago now, but we've both finally got around to seeing it. And I was looking forward to this for a long time. When the trailers first came out a month or two ago, I was really looking forward to it. And for me, I think it really delivered. I thought it was excellent film. I never saw the play, or actually the TV documentary, the TV interviews
I've seen snippets, but not enough to... I mean, I was intrigued to know how much of the dialogue they had in the interviews in the film is word for word what was in the interviews.
I believe it's pretty much entirely.
Yeah, I would have thought it would have to be. Probably more emotionally delivered in a weird way.
I think, from what I gather, pretty much the only thing they've made up completely is the phone call.
Yes.
Yeah. But having said that, Nixon did make late night drunken phone calls to people.
Okay.
So it's not within the realms of possibility that's the sort of thing he could have done.
Yeah.
But there's no evidence that he ever did that.
Right.
But I thought it was a wonderful film, and I thought it was a testament to its quality was the cast in it. I thought there's one particular scene, I can't remember what the scene is exactly, but you suddenly look at the actors on screen there.
Yeah.
And you go, well, you've got Frank Langella, you've got Michael Sheen, and then there's Toby Jones.
Yes, your old teacher.
My old teacher, yeah. He's a teacher at drama school. And look at him now! Look at him! Little Toby Jones, isn't he doing well?
And Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon.
And Oliver Platt. Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell.
I was reminded quite how good Oliver Platt is at
things.
He's
great.
Because him and Sam Rockwell both seem slightly underused in a weird way. But then they're so... I mean, the characters don't have an enormous amount to do, but what they have to do is quite important.
Yes, very
so
much
so. It's worth having good actors in those positions.
I actually quite enjoyed Oliver Platt's impression of Nixon as well. It sort of goes to show that he could have played that, probably.
Probably. A young Nixon.
Yeah, I thought it was a wonderful film, and great to see that it's been sort of made in... You know, so it's a stage play by a British writer, and it's just great to see him taking off, really. He's the guy who did The Queen as well.
Yes.
And also he did a short drama called The Deal on Channel 4 a couple of years
okay.
ago. Of which with Michael Sheen, incidentally, playing real people.
Well, before Frost Nixon, I saw a trailer for, I think, The Damned United, which
is a football
thing. Oh,
yes, he's playing Brian
Clough. Yes, is that written by the same guy as well?
I don't know if it is, actually. Don't know.
Or maybe the same director.
Michael Sheen's in that as well, playing another real person.
Yes, which seems to be Michael Sheen's niche at the moment.
It does, yeah.
Then again, he's also in Underworld, Rise of the Lycans.
So I hear, yes.
And that's probably not a real character.
Not
I'm fairly
so much.
Sure.
No, it's not a big major political event. Yes. In
but then that's the Michael Cera kind of leap we're thinking. David Frost and a werewolf.
Move
that's
along
what we need.
Move along.
But yeah, it just gripped me the whole way through.
Yeah, I thought
from the very beginning, just sort of leaning, well, not quite necessarily leaning forward in your seat, but just fascinated as the whole thing unfolds. It's immensely watchable.
And it doesn't look very too stagey as well. The danger with adapting a play, particularly a two-person play, is that it could be... Well, it's not a two-person play, there are more characters in it, but it's largely about this interview. And it could easily have looked very stagey and quite dull, really. But actually, they injected loads... The background stuff is really interesting. And it's been described like a boxing match, because you've got these two guys really sort of exchanging punches, and sometimes one gets a blow in, sometimes the other one does, with a team in the corner.
Yes.
And that's what gives it a very real edge to it, is the fact that they keep breaking every few minutes and going back to their coaches. So they're going, come on then, you know, you're doing well, but, you know, come on, warm up a bit and get a couple of hooks in. So, I'm making up words that boxing people say. I don't watch boxing.
I think a hook is a botch. It's a type of punch.
Probably is, isn't it? Right hook and a left hook.
Or fishing.
Yeah, something like
the
that.
The difference is
angling. Yeah, exactly. So it was interesting, because I saw W last week as well, finally, in a little arts theatre in London. And I was good, I enjoyed it, but Frost and Nixon, although they're both actors playing real people who've recently been around, it's not like it's old, you know, playing Alexander the Great, these are recent historical people. W, for me, felt like an episode of Dead Ringers. Where, you know, like they're impressionists. I mean, particularly, you know, I suppose Josh Brolin was very good, and again, Toby Jones is in it, he's very good again, playing more real people. But I think it's Andy Newton, I think, is in it, as Condoleezza Rice.
Oh, yeah.
And also the guy who plays Colin Powell as well. Those people...
Oh, isn't that... I want to say it's not Jeffrey Rush, it's Jeffrey Wright?
Okay, I think it
the
is.
The guy who played Felix Leiter in the Bond films.
That's right.
Yeah.
And both of those felt very much like someone just doing an impression.
No.
Although they looked perfect. They looked just right. But whenever they speak, you've got sort of the Condoleezza Rice sounding a bit sort of, oh, yes, George, I think they're all excited. And it just sounded a bit like an episode of an impressionist comedy show.
Yeah, I think it's probably a bit too recent history. Because Frost Nixon... It's David Frost when he was young.
Yes.
And because he's still around now, but a lot older. Mm. Not a lot older, but older. And Richard Nixon, of course, has now died.
Yeah.
So, but you've got, you know, 30 years of separation.
Did,
so
did
you,
Nixon listen to the podcast?
Did we mention him like in the very early podcast?
That may
actually
be.
No, I think it's about 2004.
May explain the curse of movie banter.
Oh, see, the movie
has
banter
fallen
curse
upon Richard Nixon.
Yes, several years before we started.
Well, indeed.
But anyway, so they having 30 years of separation, they're still very recent. You still know what they're like, but we remember impressions of them quite clearly. And so you can get away with doing an impression of sorts.
Yes.
Whereas now, with someone like W, we know the people as they are. So if you see an impression, it's a bit more jarring.
Well, I mean, some of the scenes, like, for example, George W. Bush choking on a pretzel.
Mm.
They just sort of bung in and, oh, isn't it silly, he choked on a pretzel. But we all sort of, we know it's silly. We know, we all laughed at it at the time, not too long ago in the press, really, a couple of years ago. And they just sort of show it on the screen, and it just feels a little bit like you're just reading the paper.
Yeah.
They haven't really added much new to it. Whereas you sort of need to add a bit of drama to it, and it's not bad. I enjoyed it, but you look at the other Oliver Stone films, and he made such a big movie with, you know, JFK or with Nixon, indeed.
Yeah,
those were films where he added a real sense of drama to it and a real sense of tension. Whereas W does feel like you're just gate crashing an episode of, you know, any sort of like Dead Ringers or any impressionist based show, like Spitting Image or something. Really,
that's like, I don't know. I mean, Oliver Stone presumably either he wanted to do it before the election, just get it out.
I think it was meant to be a timely thing. Yeah,
yeah, but it's, yeah, I mean, because again, I haven't seen it yet, but I think from the sound of it, it's a bit, there's not enough passion behind it. It's more, oh, I'll churn this out, and I'm sure it's good, but there's no real spark to it, and indeed, it feels a bit pointless because there's got no story to tell, because we know all of it.
Interestingly, a thing with Frost Nixon, actually, is that it's, again, that's a timely film because it's about holding a president to account, which is really what a lot of people want to do with George Bush.
Yes.
And it's like, finally, an interviewer nailed him. Maybe we can bring David Frost out of retirement and get an apology from Bush. Who knows?
I would say possibly Revolutionary Road, because we've had lots of films that are all good.
Yeah.
And if you're in the mood for a bit of a rant,
let's switch, shall we?
Let's switch on.
Buckle up, folks. Revolutionary Road. That was out last week. It's actually
like
got
a disappointed teacher.
It's got, I know, I'm very, go back and walk. I am a bit let down, partly because the reviews have been excellent.
Well,
really,
and it's Oscar nominated.
It's Oscar nominated, both for acting and for writing, I believe, as well.
And Sam Mendes, who knows
and
his stuff.
Sam Mendes as well. And in fact, I didn't know who directed it until the ending came up. And Mendes, I thought, really? Oh, yeah. Sam. It seems a bit self-indulgent. It does actually explain it a bit more if it's a director like Sam Mendes who's got some history behind him, because it does feel a bit like a director's been given a bit too much of a carte blanche with this. And, you know, maybe a newer director might have been kept in check a little bit by the studios. Having said that, the reviews are good for it. People do like this film. For me, it was two people rowing for 2 hours. It's been described as Titanic 2, really. What would have happened
if
Jack
an idea
and Rose actually had survived the disaster and then got depressed. because it's set in the 50s, 1955. And it's a couple, they're married, they're disillusioned. It's the worst date film ever. Let me tell you this. It is the worst date film
possibly a good
ever
breakup film, though.
Very good for that.
Yeah.
If you're thinking of getting back with an ex, go see this film, and it will put you off, I think, for a while. But for me, it was slow. It was not interesting enough, was not dramatic enough. The acting was very good. I've got to give, particularly Kate Winslet, excellent acting, fair play, because she did, of course, win Golden Globe for that. Well done for that. Leonardo DiCaprio, lots of big acting, again well acted, but he's doing his thing from The Departed again, really.
And right,
he's being a bit too explosive, which doesn't
so
really
a bit, too,
fit
bit miscast
with, you know, a film which is a bit slower paced, I think.
Yeah,
but for me, really, just the main letdown was the story and the script and the direction, I suppose, which was just very slow and very annoying. Just this non-stop rowing. Just please sit down, have a drink. I don't know, whatever. But for me, it just dragged. It just really, I didn't, maybe it didn't help that this, I saw a midnight showing of this film.
Right.
Maybe it's not a midnight film. I don't know. Maybe it's,
no, from the sound of it, it's not really a daytime film either. It's just I think it was in the Sunday Times, they said something along the lines of that the characters are irritating because they're essentially, oh, we had such great dreams, you ought to go and do this and this. And I just thought, well, you're not all that special. Not yeah. even in terms of not living up to your dreams, but they seem to think they've got so much to offer the world. And they really haven't. They've got nothing to offer the world.
Yeah.
And so they're just dull, irritating characters to watch as a result.
I think another complaint I've heard is that because it's set in 50s America, and it's meant to be this sort of very dull, monotonous era where, you know, all the identical men are going in identical suits with identical briefcases, commuting the same identical journey to the same identical office booth. But actually, to a Brit, it actually sort of, you look at it and go, wow, the 50s in America, pretty stylish. You know, I like the colour of their suits.
Do you mean as a Brit or do you mean as you?
That's probably just me. I like the cars, you know. It's quite a stylish sort of time. But I have heard some criticism of this film being that, in a way, that it's not bleak and depressing enough, in a
right.
way.
Right, okay.
Which may be a problem. Maybe that's why didn't really connect with it, because I thought, well, I don't see what they're moaning about. You know,
yeah,
I didn't
that's
really,
true.
And yeah, I can see the moaning in that they're in this street with this bit like an Edward Scissorhands style suburban
yeah.
Stepford Wives street, but I just, oh please, just stop your moaning. Just, I'm not an advocate of domestic violence, but sometimes it's the only solution. Yeah. That's a joke, by the way.
Yeah.
Just want to really
in case Paul's fiance is listening, don't worry, he's not a violent man.
In case any women are listening, well, or any men, or anyone who's
anyone.
A potential
yeah.
or previous victim
no,
of domestic abuse.
You may be an advocate of cinematic domestic violence.
This is just how bad I thought the film was that yes. made me say that.
Yes.
So blame the film.
The film would have been better if the characters had abused each other, rather than saying the film made you so angry, it made you want to go out and punch them in the face.
What I'm saying, if they just had it out in the first 5 minutes, both giving each other a club with a frying pan, it would have saved us all a lot of trouble.
Well, that's true, yes. Which is that's a solution to a lot of life's problems, I
think
find,
it is. I think it is.
In my experience. Well, yes, we're moving on from the hideousness of that.
Exactly. So avoid. There are better films. There's loads of good films out there. You don't need
true.
To go and see this film. You
yes.
know, maybe you might get more about it than I did, but there are still better films there. Avoid that. Go and see Nick and Nora.
Yeah. Well, let's move on then from depressing 50s America to oh-so-cheerful wartime Germany.
Exactly. Most just 10 years previous, it still wasn't a brilliant time. So this is the film Valkyrie.
The Valkyrie, which directed by Brian Singer, who did... See, yeah, because I knew there was one weak spot in his resume, and I was thinking Usual Suspects, X-Men, X-Men 2. X-Men 2 is very good, anyway. Mm-hmm. X-Men, yeah, it's all right. But then Superman Returns, which... yeah, see, that's it. It's not that it's an awful film, but it's not up to the standard you'd expect.
It's a very different film from Valkyrie, then. He's sort of, last few years,
yeah.
he's chopped and changed a bit, isn't he?
Yeah, which it works now, but I think...
Well, they say this is his first non-superhero film since...
Usual...
No, that Stephen King
The
film...
Apt Pupil.
Apt Pupil,
yes.
indeed, yeah, that's
which
right.
Which I think was 2000 or 98.
Yes, it's a while ago now.
That must
yeah.
be... Ni-
it's a good decade
yeah,
ago.
Very long
good
time,
decade
yeah.
ago. But I enjoyed Valkyrie. I thought it was an excellent film, Valkyrie, as I prefer to call it. Why don't you come on over? Stop making a fool out of me. Why don't you come on over? Valkyrie.
Oh, dear.
Valkyrie.
For a second, I just thought, where are you going with that? And I thought, that's where you're going with that. Yeah, please.
They should have had an opening theme tune done by Amy Winehouse and Mark Ronson.
No, the Zootons, Philistine.
Whatever. Duh. Whatever.
Yeah, it's a surprisingly gripping, involving story, considering you know what happens at the end as the film starts.
Yeah.
Not because it tells you, but at the risk of annoying all those Usual Suspects lovers, Hitler doesn't die.
Oh!
Turns out the war went on for another year and a half.
Actually, can I, on this point, actually, one of my favourite twists of anything, it's not really a film, it's a TV series, but Blackadder goes fourth, and something I hadn't realised until about the fifth viewing of it, was at the end of it, when they go, hooray, the war is over, and at the start of the episode, you almost think the war could be over.
Yes.
Maybe this is set at the end of the war.
Yeah.
And then it's the point when they go, hooray, they stop firing. Here's to the Great War, 1914 to 1917. And you go,
oh no.
Oh,
that's
not over. So you could make a very good war film where you do that. You actually think that this is the ending of the war. But
yes.
actually, you
then
go.
You suddenly find out.
You realise it's actually 1942.
You know something that the characters don't.
But no, so yeah, you're right. You do know the ending at the head. But in a way, it just makes you feel for the characters even more because you're there thinking, oh no, just it's not going to. Work.
Well, this is why. I mean, on occasion when I've found out the twist of a film, it happened with The Sixth Sense due to someone submitting mistakes for it to my site before I saw the film. I knew what the twist was, and then went to see The Sixth Sense anyway. And because I knew the twist, I sort of was just watching the film in a different way and thinking, because of that, then I can see what
exactly. Yeah,
and so it means you can watch with Valkyrie. I mean, everyone knows it, so you can see it all unfold, and you know. You can see where the problems are developing and what's going to go wrong, and then once it goes wrong, how it spirals from there. Yeah, and Tom Cruise is surprisingly good. He's quite understated.
Yes, he is. Yeah. He's not really a typical Tom Cruise film in a way, really.
Yeah,
it's not like he's the big hero. He's sort of the hero, but it's his film. But
in a low-key sort of way.
It's not as much. It's much more of the ensemble cast are brilliant.
Yes, it's
really
an amazing guy. You've got Bill Nye, you've got Kenneth Branagh, who's good to see him on film. He's
very good. He's really good. He should do more.
He really
like
should.
Branagh.
And who else?
Tom Wilkinson's in
it. Yes, of course.
Tom Hollander. There's actually four people in the four actors from the film who are also in Black Book, which is one of my favourite Second World War films, which is Paul Verhoeven's Dutch language film. But yes, which for me only lends it more of an air of this is, you know, Second World War film canon. Yes. I mean canon as in C-A-N.
Yeah.
But anyway.
And also, I mean, education as well, because I didn't know the entire extent of the plot. I mean, the plot of it is there are a group of conspirators in Germany, or in the German military, who realise that Hitler is destroying Germany, and so they want to kill him. And they put together... There is a plan already in existence called Operation Valkyrie, which is designed to get the reservists involved in case of civil unrest. And they rewrite the plan in order to they can then turn it to their own advantage and suppress the SS and then take over Berlin and then
it's a good plan.
Move on to
that.
It does. I mean,
it nearly worked.
Well, that's something else. I mean, it works in the film because... Or it's interesting in the film because it nearly works. Apparently, that's one of the things they have changed slightly in the film, in that the plan progresses a bit more than it did in reality. I think,
really?
Or slightly more, not radically so, but slightly more of the dissent spreads.
It's touch and go for a while, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really down to a couple of phone calls that it didn't quite work.
Yes, exactly. And looking up online, it's relatively historically accurate, or pretty much, aside from, you know, maybe they get a bit further in the film than they did in reality, but it's pretty much as it happened. And I think the German press have reacted favourably as well, up to a point.
Got a standing ovation in the German premiere,
I think Tom Cruise was slightly criticised for being, he's sort of an American hero rather than a German hero.
Right.
But then that's sort of more of a cultural difference anyway, and I think also everyone can understand why they did it that way,
because
it's an American film.
Yes, yeah.
But yeah, it's just, it really involves you in terms of seeing things go on and you don't know what's going to work and what isn't going to work.
Yeah.
And then once gaps start appearing or people start doing the wrong thing, you really, it gets you quite annoyed.
Oh, Kevin McNally, that's the other
guy. Oh, yes, who was in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Indeed.
With his enormous sideburns.
I've got a friend of mine is a good friend of his, so I another vague link, so I had to mention him, because just in case she's listening. Kevin McNally, good egg.
Yes, very much so. But there was a quote I wrote down, which, because it made me realise that this is sort of how I felt. I think it was from the German press. So Valkyrie doesn't dare to be popcorn cinema, at the same time lacks any conceptual brilliance, which is slightly pretentious. No, well, it means it's a slightly middle ground.
Right.
Because it's not... I think the German press especially, all people generally, were worried it was going to be big action adventure hero, stylized
which is
the
not,
war.
Is it? No.
Which it really isn't. It's quite low-key and quite true to the fact. But as a result, it's not quite in-depth or heavyweight enough to be that sort of film either. So it ends up slightly in between. And it's not particularly action-y, but nor is it ridiculously dramatic. So it's slightly hard to categorise, but that doesn't stop it being extremely watchable.
I think this is why I also like the film Black Book, which is, it has a very similar thing of not much depth. It's sort of a thriller.
Yeah.
It's a true story thriller, but it's not, you know, as thoughtful or as slow, I suppose, and steady as something like The Reader, for example, where you're analysing much more about people's opinions.
Oh, that's true.
It's driven along by the action.
Yes.
Really. And certainly true of Valkyrie. It's, you don't get many scenes where you focus on what someone's thinking during that scene. It's much more, this is a scene not to show how they're feeling about it, but to show that actually gets a phone call which urges the plot along.
Yes.
The plot keeps on moving.
And it's
not
as rapid fire as it sounds, but it's pretty much this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened.
Yeah,
finish.
Exactly.
Which isn't a bad thing. And all of the this happened bits are all very well acted.
Yeah.
But yes, you don't find out... Yeah, like you say, the emotional depth of what's going on.
It's such a good story, though, that you don't sort of need to pause too long. It can keep moving.
Yeah,
they're not adding much.
It's criticism
to keep it
that you can level after watching it and think, "Oh, I wish they'd gone into a bit more depth." But as you're watching it, you don't care because it's not ridiculously shallow by any means, and you're just carried along on the action and intrigued as to what's going on.
I thought it is interesting that it comes only about a month or so after the release of Defiance.
Yes,
because you know, you look at those two films and you can conclude, "Oh, they were good Nazis," and "Oh, they were bad Jewish people."
Yeah,
well, not bad as such. Well, some of the people in Defiance are bad, but also, you know, it's mainly turning on its head
yes,
the stereotype
it's against types, yeah.
as Jewish victims. These are Jewish fighters, and equally, these are good Nazis.
Yeah,
but it goes to, actually, I was thinking about this the other day. You can chart sort of the history of Second World War films, where you've got the ones which are made during the Second World War, which are mostly propaganda, and then you've got sort of slightly more stoical, I suppose, action romps in the sort of 50s and some of the black and white films, and then you've got
and also films made with the confidence of winning, especially when it's like it's not so much propaganda. You don't need to hammer it down their throats, but it's still
it's
look at
triumphant,
look at
victorious, the Great Escape, that sort of thing, the
and
romps,
longest
you know,
day,
longest day,
like,
those
yeah.
sort of things. Yeah, and then you get, I suppose, in the 70s and 80s, not so many Second World War films, but more about Vietnam and but films saying war is bad rather than this heroic Second World War victory.
Yeah.
It's now saying actually we're in another war. We don't want to say war is brilliant and triumphant. Let's say it's quite dark and depressing.
Yeah.
So that's your 70s and 80s and 90s, I suppose. And then more recently, the Second World War films are turning these various ideas on its head a little bit, like Defiance and like Valkyrie.
Also, because there's enough there's enough distance historically that you can look back and you know, everyone knows what went on.
Yeah.
And now let's look at sort of the untold stories or exactly. other aspects to it.
You can't just sort of tell the big stories anymore because they've been told. So you need to find new ways of looking at it. But it's such a big, you know, 6 years long was the war. So you've got a lot of stories still to tell there. So it's just a different way of doing it. I also saw this week in the cinema The Wave, which was this German film, which again deals with the war in a very different, interesting way. Yeah, it's about a teacher who is teaching his class all about the Second World War, and they aren't interested. They say, yeah, we get the lesson, you know, you've told us 1,000 times Hitler was bad, Nazis were bad, Germans, sorry, yeah, because they're Germans, you know, it's a German-made film. They're saying, we shouldn't do it again, we're sorry, we get it. And he says, well, do you think this could happen again? And they say, well, no, of course it couldn't happen again. We know, we've learned our lesson.
Yeah.
And then he slowly, over the film, and over the course of a study week, builds up this idea of a class, a project, where they all decide to set up their own little group.
Right.
And it starts off as just a fun little club. And by the end of the week, of course, it's still a fun little club for those in it, but they are picking on people in the way that the Nazis picked on Jewish people. And and that's exactly what the point of the film is, that actually it's so easy for a fascist dictator to rise up.
All it takes is a bit of time, noticing. There's a push in the right direction.
Exactly.
Because a target.
Because I saw it only a couple of weeks ago, I saw the film The Pianist, the Adrian Brody film. And there's a couple of bits in that I couldn't quite relate to as well, where he's in hiding, he's a Jewish person in hiding in Poland, and some people next door point him out and say, actually, there is a Jewish person and you must get him, kill him. And they're not Nazis, these are just working people.
Yeah.
I think at this point they're actually in Germany, so they might be working German people, but they're not Nazis, and yet they still dob him into the authorities and go, you are scum and we spit on you. And I was thinking, but surely if there was a war going on, you'd have a bit of empathy for that guy and you wouldn't report him straight away. But having seen The Wave, you see how easy it is. If that's all you're told, if all the propaganda you hear is actually how bad these people are, you do start to believe. And it's nice to be made to feel superior, which is why in the film The Wave, they do this. They actually make people feel superior to the others, and you start to believe it. You're told that you're better, so therefore...
And also, of course, once you start putting down people who aren't in your group, then, or even bullying them, then, of course, they almost they don't actually literally become inferior to you, obviously, but then you are in a more physical position of going, look, I have beaten you down, clearly I'm superior.
Exactly, yes.
So it becomes a self-fulfilling...
You have the help of the state to do that, really.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I thought The Wave was an excellent film, and it's based on a real story as well. It's actually, the real story is, I think it happened in an American school in California about 20 years ago, and it was an experiment this teacher did to his American students who thought the Second World War wasn't relevant to them. And he was showing, actually, it is, and he set it all up. But also the film and the true event is about the fact that it went a bit too far.
Right.
And if they'd stopped about halfway through Wednesday or Thursday, it would have been good.
Yes.
In fact, it went on to Friday, and people actually got hurt.
Ah.
That's not good. So, an interesting film. Recommend The Wave. Very good. Mm.
Yeah, last but not necessarily least is Primer, which I saw on DVD this week.
Good
which
movie.
I used her a while ago and recommended. Yeah, I finally caught up with it. And I'm pleased. It's quite short. It's about an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm pleased because it meant that I watched it through twice in the same evening because I kind of had to. It's a very simple premise and apparently cost something like $8,000 to make.
Really?
When you say
simple premise, do you mean simple premise, really?
I think it is a simple premise, but then executed incredibly convoluted.
That's the thing. You've got to watch it twice, really.
Well, yes. Because it starts off with four men in a garage running a business or a couple of businesses, and it's never really explained what they're doing. We know they're making electronics or playing around with things, trying to get something working.
Yeah.
And essentially, it seems to be the typical men in garages frame of mind. And two of them, while trying to develop something, and it's never really explained what, stumble across something else that isn't really entirely explained what either. And turns out it's something to do with time travel.
Yeah.
And I'll go that far. It is explained slightly better as the film goes on. But essentially they realise how they can use this machine to manipulate time and travel in time. And then how it ends up affecting their lives and what they get up to and how it sort of gets out of control. And they just start out wanting to make a bit of money, and then they both have different ideas what they should do with it. It's a very thought-provoking film, not least just trying to understand it.
Yes.
But also, I mean, to a lesser degree, they don't really make a big deal about the morality of it too much, but there's a lot unsaid that's implied about the morality of it, which sets you thinking about it. And then after watching it, I then watched it again, and so you realise, okay, so that's happened.
And you get it twice, you get it more second time around.
Yes, but only get it more. You don't get it completely. Because I then looked up online for a description and thought, okay, so that's what went on there, and then So it's quite convoluted, and it's quite muddled, and it's difficult to follow, but it's rewarding if you make the effort.
Yeah, it's an intelligent film. It's
yes.
It's a... a watch that don't put it on while doing something else.
It's, no, you've got to pay attention. But it's only about an hour and a quarter, so it's not going to eat up, you know, 2.5 hours of your life. Well, it will if you watch it twice.
Yes,
but yes, but that works. So think of it as a 2.5 hour long film, and then you watch it twice, and it does make sense. And it's an interesting film, and it's just worth seeing because it's just a random film I'd never heard of,
and it's unique, it's original, it's one of its kind. Well worth a look. Yeah.
Yes. Right. Should we finish with Desert Island Flicks?
Desert Island Flicks, indeed.
Just to wrap up.
Yes, Desert Island Flicks. We pick a category, best film of all time, and this week we're going for a snow based film.
Yes. It was weird. There were a few options, but I would probably say The Shining.
Interesting.
Yeah, see, Shining. Heavily snow-based.
Yeah.
And yourself?
I'm going to go with Fargo.
Fair
Fargo
enough.
It is, yeah. I had another choice, which I've since forgotten, even though I set this thing in the first place.
Oh, well, yes.
I should write this one
next
down.
Next week.
Yeah, if I think of it, what if you, good podcastee, have a suggestion for your favourite snow-based movie?
Yeah, very true.
Then why not email us in? You know, you've got The Snowman, I suppose, and you've got...
True.
I was going to say Cool Runnings, but that's not about snow. That's the whole point of it.
Well, no, but they end up in snow.
I suppose.
Yeah, anyways, but podcast at moviemistakes.com.
Indeed.
Drop us a line. I think that may be it.
Indeed, yes.
Pretty much.
So thank you for listening. And go and see those good films we talked
very
about.
True. And don't go and see Revolutionary Road.
Avoid. See anything but.
Yes. But yeah, there is a huge amount of good things on at the moment. So go and see them all. And
Indeed. Then
email us with your thoughts and opinions. And yes, and please do review us on iTunes and get your friends listening in.
Stay well, stay healthy, stay alive.
Yes, do stay alive.
Prove the curse of movie banter.
Stay alive, I will find you. No, that's something else. That's Last of the Mohicans.
Which
I largely remember from Eddie Izzard talking about
good
it.
Good work.
Eddie Izzard, who's in Valkyrie, which is slightly weird casting.
It all links back, doesn't it?
It does.
It all links
back. Actually, that was one last Valkyrie point, which is I couldn't quite work out why Eddie Izzard was in it.
I found that an odd choice. In fact, there's lots of really good actors, and nothing against Eddie Izzard, but he's not a good actor, really.
No, he's not. He's not the best. I mean, he's perfectly right in this. He doesn't have a huge amount to do, but given he doesn't have much to do, why have Eddie Izzard
in it? He's playing a general as well. And he didn't really seem that generally.
Yes, especially when he first turns up, and Tom Cruise, I've already approached you, and you said no. And thought, well, we don't know who you are.
Exactly. Yes.
Anyway.
Sorry. Maybe you approached him at a gig.
quite possibly. Do some jokes about Valkyrie.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Don't wear a dress. Anyway.
Yes, stay alive. Please don't die.
Thank you.
And we will see you next week.
On Movie Banter. Bye-bye.
Farewell.